Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song.
Who would have thought that the letter C would have actually portrayed such a key and important part in the history of Middlesbrough and so on? C, of course, for Carrick. That would be Michael, of course, the manager, possibly the greatest manager the Championship has ever seen, depending on results and so on. But that's one C that obviously springs to mind. Then, of course, we've got Coventry. In Coventry City, two C's there. Obviously, a key sort of aspect. Do we want to play Coventry in the playoffs? Is this a rehearsal? Is this going to be a case of no, there are other teams there? And of course, there's the coronation, yet another C that we actually have in this coronation weekend. And do the C's stop there? No, C's continue ever onwards because there's a new mayor of Middlesbrough, Chris Cook, two C's again. So you can see that C is very much where we are. Rob Nichols, hopefully we won't be all at C at the end of this whole sequence. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, thank you. I've been to the C. I've been to Sunderland, which is not a C, but I've been doing a run in Sunderland today. And we hope that we don't meet Sunderland at the Sunderland City by the Sea at the end of this playoff sequence, because we're a bit in fear of meeting them at Wembley somehow.
Well, I was thinking about that because clearly it is a case of who would you like to play? I mean, you've got conceivably Coventry City, Millwall, Sunderland, West Bromwich Albion, Blackburn Rovers. I mean, Chris Bartley, yet another C. See what we're doing here. What are your thoughts in terms of who you'd like to play? Is it destiny bringing us to Coventry City, or do you think Sunderland and Tony Mowbray could add a whole new ingredient to the mix?
I think that my main worry for tomorrow is maybe we get too caught up in who we might play type scenarios. I think the best thing that we can do tomorrow is turn in a really good performance to kind of recapture a little bit of the momentum that we've lost in the last two games. I know that by beating Coventry, it could usher in Sunderland possibly. But I think the most important thing tomorrow is just to kind of get really good performance, because we seem to have lost our way a little bit in the last two games.
Well, the words, the very sage words of the father there, let's turn in classic Star Wars routine to the son. I'm not saying that obviously one is Darth Vader and the other isn't. But Thomas Bartley, your thoughts on that particular aspect? I mean, do you share your dad's view that actually we need to actually get back onto the form treadmill?
Yeah, I think even if we did have preference on a team, I think it's far more important that we go into the playoffs, whoever we play, on a good footing, particularly after the last few matches, which haven't really worked out as we would have liked, even if there's been, you know, reasonable justifications for some of those performances. So yeah, I think we all just want to go into the playoffs in a good position now and have a good go at it.
I mean, actually, there's only Millwall in terms of the top six who have a worse playing record than Middlesbrough at present. But let's turn to our ace author, Jenny Finch, who I'm sure would write lots of things about the sea. In fact, you should live by the sea. But Jenny, I know you've been celebrating like crazy in that Republic of Ireland notion, the crowning of King Charles yesterday, and probably also the fact that Chris Cook is now the mayor of Middlesbrough. He got in by a few hundred votes, admittedly, but it was tight, but he did it. So your thoughts, please, on Borough first and foremost.
I think you're all right. I think you need to go out there and just play your absolute best. It doesn't matter who comes along afterwards. If you go out of this on a high and you show, I mean, there shouldn't be a team in the Championship that's happy to play Middlesbrough in the playoffs. They have been absolutely flying. So get your wings flapping and get flying again, lads. Mm. Go for it.
There we are. Inspiring words, certainly, Rob. And given the very sharp turnaround of how rapidly you forwarded the details for the Coventry City Fly Me to the Moon package, I tell you, this gives me a whole new meaning to the term speed reading. We had to actually look at, again, your thoughts with respect to that. So Rotherham, of course, with respect to the whole thing. I mean, did you feel as though, well, you know, we did Rotherham a favour because obviously they're a Yorkshire side, so we wanted them to actually stay up from that point of view? Or would you have preferred to have actually had a positive result against that? And are you, you know, concerned about this thing? Because, of course, Coventry, as you say, also leads up to another C. That is Chris Wilder's nemesis as well.
Yeah, that's right. It is amazing how it's come round. And, you know, that the final game against Chris Wilder. Thomas was at that match, and he remembers it well. And it's amazing how far both clubs have come since, because Coventry, if you remember, Coventry were bottom of the division at the time when they beat us, because it was the first game they could play at home because the pitch had been ruined by another sea, the Commonwealth Games, with the rugby being the rugby sevens being played there. So I'm in agreement really with what everybody has said, is that we need to go for it against Coventry. We need to, even if it means that we end up playing them again, home and away, we need to get the performance. And as far as the Rotherham was concerned, well, we know about Luton being robbed. We were robbed with a penalty decision. Against Rotherham, obviously, the red card was pretty harsh. There was very little in it. And again, we lost Johnny Howson actually in the warm-up to the game, and he's the captain. So that was a big upheaval. I was a little bit more concerned against after the Rotherham performance than the Luton performance, because I thought we played really, really well and dominated Luton. Against Rotherham, I'd really rather we could have, you know, obviously could have scored a goal. And I think that's why it's very important that we do put in a performance as well as a result against Coventry. And you notice that Michael Carrick has been talking about momentum of performances rather than not necessarily momentum of results. maybe he has to say that. But yeah, let's sign off the season and then let everybody else do the worrying about us.
Well, in the immortal words of Dana Malt, so playoffs it is. We dealt with the battle for second in quite possibly the most Borough way possible, do all the hard work and then falter to a crap team managed by an ex-Middlesbrough manager. Typical. Of course, kudos obviously to Neil Warnock, who obviously proved he's still got his magic and probably paved the way for those other wonderful youngsters, Roy Hodgson and of course Sam Allardyce, to equally be appointed, proving that obviously, you know, where there's life, there's still hope. So you see, Thomas, you could still take over at a football club in the not too distant future. It's never too late.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a funny cycle, isn't it, that some of these teams go through. I mean, we've seen it ourselves, haven't we, really, in the sort of Steve Gibson era at Borough. We've kind of flitted between having young, quote-unquote, rookies and sort of older, wiser hands at the helm. So yeah, there's certainly a tendency for these big Premier League teams to try to pull towards some of these older, more experienced managers, but yeah.
Well, it's also worth noting Sean Rye, erstwhile contributor to, of course, Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast, and, of course, a regular correspondent like, of course, Mike Thomas and the entire Bartley household to the actual magazine itself. He comes up with the following statistics. Since Carrick's arrival, Borough have not been involved in one single nil-nil draw. That could be tempting fate. Borough have scored three or more goals on 14 occasions this season, as compared with only three occasions last season. They've taken 25 points from losing positions. They host the league's top scorer and the Championship's Player of the Year in Chuba Akpom. Another C. I think there's a theme coming across here. And also, you currently have Borough three players in double figures with Chuba Akpom, Michael Force, and of course Cameron Archer. I won't even say it now. They've only failed to score three times under Carrick, and have completed more passes per game than any other team apart from Swansea and indeed champions Burnley, who've just voted or given a five-year contract to Vincent Kompany, I see. I mean, it's not been a bad season, Rob, has it, all things considered?
Been a phenomenal season. Whatever happens now, we've seen some of the best football that we've ever witnessed. Borough play really at Riverside or the Essen Park. We scored so many goals. We scored more goals in a season since any time since 1966. We've Chuba Akpom scored more goals individually than any Borough striker since Alan Peacock in the early 60s. And they're just you mentioned the passes, but just the passages of football have been so scintillating to watch that it's been just an absolute pleasure. And in whichever division we take part in next season, if we could see similar sort of football, then I think we'll all be delighted, but we're greedy, aren't we? We want to go up.
and possibly want at least one more Fly Me to the Moon podcast before the end of the season. So we did say that we'd actually look to schedule that when the Wembley trip is confirmed. But before confirmation, it is technically the last paper version, or at least a podcast for the ongoing league season. And Rob, tragically, I don't believe you can take part in the duet of poetry reading for Jimmy Flynn, which is what we normally do at this time, because you're not there, because, as you said, you're running in Sunderland or doing a deep dive espionage mission for Michael Carrick into the side.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I haven't got back in time. Obviously, I need to be fitter than I could have.
With your permission, I'll do the reading, to do this literally. So I've seen it just seconds ago, but hopefully we'll work our way through this. And then, of course, Jenny and Thomas and Chris can pull it to shreds, which is their world. It's probably okay. We understand this. Here we are. Willie Madron, a name, of course, that effectively I recall very well. He was one of the early autographs that I actually collected back from the days back in the 70s, etc., before indeed Thomas was even born. But there we are. That's another lie entirely. This is Jimmy Flynn's tribute to Willie Madron. Willie Madron was born in the heart of industrial Teesside, where housing and industry stood side by side. His home stood in the shadow of Billingham ICI, which belched out clouds of smog that filled the sky. The sounds of furnace shipyard in his ears would ring, and the transporter bridge would, over the Tees, workers bring. Haverton Hill was where his legendary Spoggy was born and bred, and from there a path to football fame he gloriously tread. As a talented junior player, he suffered early heartbreak when a trial for Leeds United was cancelled due to an ankle bone break. For Middlesbrough FC, this proved to be a blessing in disguise, as post-injury his talent belatedly caught the club's eye. For his hometown club, he duly signed on the dotted line and kick-started a Borough career incomparably fine. Multi-talented, skilled in defence, midfield and attack, he opted to settle into the permanent position of centre-back. He was the rock upon which Jack Charlton built his Borough team and instrumental in fulfilling fans' 20 years promotion dream. Well-informed observers rated this magnificent Haverton Hill lad the greatest centre-back England never had, who for most of his career knocked on England's door, his international ambitions aborted behind the treatment room door. The footballer's curse, a troublesome knee, caused him constant pain and foiled him of the international recognition he deserved to attain. At the age of 27, at the peak of his powers, in his prime, injury blew an early final whistle on the career of this footballer fine. Not the same without you, Rob, but still, you know, I tried. I did the best to actually sort of work through it. Still. Jenny, you're the wordsmith, well, one of the wordsmiths here, basically, from that point of view. Your thoughts on that one by Jimmy?
That's a very complicated poem with very long lines. He's done extremely good to hang on to some of them. It was also very informative. I knew nothing about this young player until now, and I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Yeah, sadly, passed away a few years ago, but certainly a great man. And part of, obviously, the centre-back pairing of Willie Madron and Stuart Boehm, of course, who, Chris, you may well recall.
Yeah, they were really a great match, I think. Willie was obviously a little bit more of a cultured player. I think he's like a lot of centre-halves now, very comfortable about bringing the ball out the box. And Stuart Boehm was your typical stopper, really powerful in the air and a great tackler. But they really worked well as a centre-back combination, I think.
Early incarnation of perhaps Jonathan Woodgate. Thomas Bartley, any thoughts on Jimmy's ode to Willie?
Yeah, brilliant as always. Yeah, I mean, you know, Willie Madron, as you were saying, obviously not a player that I was fortunate enough to see, but one that I'm very much familiar with from having heard much about his time at Middlesbrough, and obviously very sad the nature of his passing and whatnot, and the fundraising. But, you know, the positive side of that was obviously the fundraising and charity work that came out of it. So yeah, a brilliant poem, brilliant ode.
We have a certain amount of sympathy, I suppose, for fans of Hartlepool United who think, oh, Wrexham, that could have been us. Sorry, wasn't. So there we are. As Wrexham go one way and Hartlepool go the other. But still, obviously, we hope that it's not too long that they spend in the National League reaches. Rob, from your own perspective, any sympathy for Hartlepool? Or is it a case of, well, you know, we just have to continue being the biggest team in the Northeast?
No, I think there were four seasons out last time, weren't they? I might be wrong, but it's not easy. And obviously it would have been much, much more difficult for them if Wrexham was still in there. And I'm not been following the playoffs, so I don't know where Notts County are, but they could do without Notts County as rivals as well, because Notts County got over 100 points,
well,
didn't they?
They are through to the final, Rob. They have actually beaten today. Just about. They scraped through against Boreham Wood. I think it was 3-2 in the end, but they actually have made it to the final. Right. So we'll see what happens with respect to that in terms of playoff time. But inevitably, it's page 14 of Fly Me to the Moon, the paper edition. One of these days I'll see it again. What the hey? In which we have the classic line, it's head over heart time. With we have spent the last few matches of the season in a highly unusual position, a state of blissful and relaxed complacency even. The time to get those sun loungers in Marbella secured and the trunks out of the drawer, well, not quite. The words, of course, of Thomas Bartley. Talk to us, Thomas, about it's head over heart time.
Well, I think it's that kind of, well, we're in a very odd situation, as you know, those opening lines that you just read out there state, in that we're obviously trying to strategize to a degree. And sort of mitigate any risks that might arise and, just get ourselves in a good headspace and physical condition for the playoffs. And really, there's a degree to which we now have to kind of endure rather than enjoy these last few games, however exciting they may well be. We really all just want the outcome more than the sort of enjoyment of these next few matches. So, it's very much kind of make decisions with the head rather than enjoy the sort of emotion of the time. And obviously, you know, 7 years ago today, we had that great game with Brighton. And obviously, that's certainly not short of emotion, but it was a very tense game, as I recall, needless to say. That's kind of what I'm getting at, really, I suppose.
And Jorkaeff, of course, a Coventry City player, was actually rejected by Brighton. He was on their books for a time, but never managed to quite make it at Brighton. So interesting from that perspective. Thomas mentioned head there, Rob, and it brings us neatly around to head for change. Clearly, I think first coming onto the general sort of discussion when we were talking about Jeff Astle and other such folk, etc. But you've got an interview with Dr. Judith Gates, the co-founder of Head for Change. And wife of a very defender, Bill Gates, on this one. Share with us about this centre spread interview.
Yeah, I met Dr. Judith Gates at an event recently that hosted by the MFC Foundation. And it was an event built around Alan Peacock, who's former, we've mentioned him already, former Middlesbrough and Leeds and England World Cup player, centre forward, who's now suffering from dementia. And Alan's been going out into care homes in the area. He takes what he calls his memory box, and it's a box that has lots of details about his career in it. And he goes and engages with other people in the care homes that have got dementia, and they have conversations about their memories go the other way. They can remember things from a long time ago, and it sparks these sort of things, it's really good to get those people engaged and it gives them a real lift and everything. At the opening of this exhibition, Dr. Judith Gates was speaking and talking about Head for Change charity, and it's the tragedy of the modern game, the amount of people, even younger than Alan, that have been struck down with dementia as a result of, it's like a repetitive strain, repetitive heading of the ball. Their charity presents all the science because it's all factual. It looks for education and it tries to make sure that young players and their families know all the facts. And then looks for answers and looks for solutions. And they're looking for major change throughout football. It's very sad to, and the one part that isn't scientifically backed is what she's seen with her own eyes from their charity, is that the amount of ex-footballers getting a very sort of a dementia that actually changes their behaviour into aggressive and restless and they're actually hitting their heads against the wall or hitting people in their family because of this, the impact on the brain. So she wants to get across that as well, that it's not a lot of the people that are being afflicted with dementia, it's not just a case of losing the memory. It's also totally changing their personality, and it becomes really disruptive for the whole family and can be very violent. So I thought this was a really important interview to put out and to maybe give a little bit more publicity and awareness for something that's afflicting a lot of footballers, and just to dispel the belief that, and the hope really, that it was that this would be something that with Jeff Astle and others, it was to do with heading the old case ball. But no, it's the modern football as well, and it's not something that's going to stop. It's going to continue, and if anything, it's going to get worse, sadly.
I mean, Jenny, any thoughts from your own perspective? Because clearly, I think this first emerged with North American football originally, and then I thought it might cross over into rugby. There's been concerns about that. Do you feel we should actually seriously be considering a ban on heading in the professional game?
I think something needs to be done. There's a lot of jiggering about with the rugby game at the moment, with deciding when you can tackle and how high you can tackle and stuff like that. And some of the ideas have been completely ludicrous and thrown straight out again. They are contact sports. Rugby particularly is a contact sport. And there's been a tremendous number of injuries. They've got a good head injury protocol in rugby. I'm not sure what the head injury protocol might be in football. And of course, the danger in football is it's more insidious in that it builds up small amounts. So if somebody heads the ball and falls over and gets up and they go, oh yeah, nobody takes any notice. If somebody takes a blow to the head in rugby, they're taken off the field for a 10 to 15 minute head injury assessment and only allowed to return if a doctor says they're safe to go, to kind of concussion protocol. With football, you've got a lot of lesser knocks, and that works out to be just as dangerous. And I'm not sure how they're going to tackle that, but I hope they do. My father had dementia, and it's heartbreaking.
Chris, any thoughts on yourself? We were talking about Willie Madron, who obviously headed the ball many a time, and again had a challenging end to his own career, of course, from that point of view. Do we need to have substantive change in terms of the rules of the game? Because concussion industry injuries are obviously taken seriously, but are they taken seriously enough?
Yeah, I think something definitely needs to be done. And I agree with what Rob said, really, about the, I don't know whether it's a little bit of a myth that it was in the kind of the old, in Jeff Astle's days and Bill Gates, that the ball was a lot heavier and things like that. And that may be causing to do. But I know in the interview that Rob has, Bill's wife does actually say that, Judith, that the speed and the velocity of the current balls could actually cause a greater impact. And I think there's a danger that there seems to be sort of people bringing these things into the sort of the public domain, and then it just seems to like kind of go away again. And I think that there definitely needs to be something done in terms of, stopping heading, really, because there's no... Once you allow it, that you can't really legislate within the field of play. It either needs to be stopped, or that there needs some sort of investigation into maybe the weight of balls that might cause less impact on the brain. It just needs to be. I don't think there's any halfway house with heading, really. You either just bring in legislation to stop heading, or it just carries on, which you just can't do, really.
Mm. Thomas, any thoughts from a younger perspective about whether we do need to see this change, and that doesn't really matter about the ball size, that the clue is in the name, football should be played, you know, with using feet and not literally using the heads. It should be more five-a-side rules.
Yeah, well, I think it's very interesting. You know, this has been something that's been brewing for a number of years. I remember actually doing this podcast a couple of years ago after Nubby Styles had died. And his family, I think, have joined the sort of legal action, or the sort of interest in that case and the research. This has been something that's going on for a long time. You know, everybody obviously knows about the number of the England 1966 World Cup team that have been afflicted with dementia and other conditions related to chronic head injuries. It's something that there's clearly an appetite. I mean, I know that there's been a big research project going on in Scotland for a number of years now, which has made a lot of conclusions and recommendations. I think it's now just incumbent on the sort of on the game to respond. And I was interested to read in the interview that the PFA seems to have even gone in a bit of a backward direction in the last couple of years on this, which is concerning because obviously that is the body ultimately which represents players. So I think that there needs to be a desire to make changes. You know, you're certainly not short of players being concerned about this or families who have a personal interest in this case. It's just a case of responding to the recommendations and the research and enacting something that is worthwhile and will make a lasting change.
Yes, indeed. Some interesting things indeed. Let's turn to page 28 of the paper version of Fly Me to the Moon, of course, and the words upwards and onwards, with an opening paragraph which goes, it is probably quite fitting that the longest, most protracted season ever, if we exclude the 2019-2020 season that was interrupted by the COVID pandemic, should last a little longer. The season that began on the 30th of July against West Brom at the Riverside could possibly end on Saturday, the 27th of May at Wembley, and it's not inconceivable that we could face West Bromwich Albion again on that date. You've been obviously working out your calculations, Chris, on this one, because as we said, it could be West Brom, it could be Sunderland, who knows who we'll be facing from that point of view. But would you like to just pick out some of the key aspects of this wonderful breakdown of the longest season ever?
Well, it was a season that really, when we're thinking about some of the performances, well, obviously we're going back to that Coventry away game where, in all honesty, I felt we were in a relegation fight. Some of the nature of the performances, they were a little bit listless. We certainly didn't have the kind of the pressing game that was everybody called Wilder Ball last season. And we just seemed to be re-energised by Carrick's arrival, and it's just quite an incredible turnaround, really, the way that I know Rob referred to the amount of goals we scored. And I know Sean mentioned that we've got in his stats breakdown that we've scored three or more 14 times this season. It's something that I've never kind of come across in my history of being a Borough supporter. Our scoring record is just, I think Sean also referred that when we got promoted last time, our top scorers were Ramirez and Stuani on 7, and we've got 3 players who've got in double figures. So it's just kind of, it feels kind of revolutionary, really, the kind of the performances that Carrick's managed to pull out of the team. And I think we just want to temper that with it. If things don't quite go our way tomorrow, because I think Borough fans are notoriously fickle, and if we don't win tomorrow or we're putting in a different performances, I think everyone might think, particularly if we do play Coventry in the playoffs, that the doom and gloom will multiply. And one of the things I refer to in the article, that when we did qualify through the playoffs, we actually got beat by Bradford 3 times before we beat them in the final game, and that was enough to take us to the final. So I think I'm just asking for a little bit of rational thinking
calm.
If it don't go well tomorrow. But calm, yes, a period of calm if things don't go our way tomorrow.
Well, certainly, as I say, we still have no real indication, apart from the fact that the ticket prices are very competitive and will be worth booking in terms of the playoffs, who the teams will be. As I say, literally, conceivably, Blackburn Rovers, West Brom, Sunderland, Millwall, Coventry, it all depends on results, how those things pan out. Any preference, Rob, for your first playoff opponents?
Well, I think everybody apart from Coventry have been doing the best to blow it, really, haven't they? So it's
Sunderland, to be fair, have actually had 3 wins and 2 draws. So Tony Mowbray's obviously been doing something right there.
Yeah, they've allowed Sunderland back into it because Sunderland, you know, a couple of matches ago were well out of it. But yeah, he's done a very good job, Tony Mowbray. I don't think I wouldn't want to play Sunderland in the playoffs. I don't know if it's possible in the two-legged. I've purposely not been looking too closely at this, but I wouldn't mind someone West Brom or Blackburn. Millwall have been very indifferent for a while. I don't like travelling to Millwall particularly, but I think we'd be very confident against any of those teams. Coventry will be difficult at their stadium, and there will be that mindset of that they have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain because they've come from nowhere. They've done so well, so that will be difficult. But I think we can. I would still expect if we could stay in the tie in the first leg, even against Coventry, that we should beat them in the second leg. So just see what happens, but definitely go out there tomorrow and win the game.
And Thomas, any preferences for yourself?
Well, beyond a sort of self-interested preference in Coventry, because it would be a lot easier to try to get to being nearby where I am. I don't really have a preference. I think the reality is, you know, of those 4 teams that are going to qualify for the playoffs, obviously, excluding ourselves, you're going to have to beat 2 of 3 anyway. So you've kind of got to have that sort of rational approach to thinking that we've been playing well enough to beat any of these teams. I don't have a preference. As Rob was saying, quite a few of the teams haven't really been in great form and seem to be trying to sort of, you know, ruin their chances. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, given that relegation and automatic promotion are tied up and the focus will mainly be on those last couple of playoff spaces.
And Jenny from Ireland, any interesting views for yourself? Or is it a case of, well, you know my views on Millwall?
not Millwall. No, I'm not surprised you don't want to go to Millwall, Rob. It's pretty, interesting. Bring it on, I think. I mean, Millwall have actually got the worst record in the last 5 matches. But I think they can beat anybody that they're likely to be up against on this. And they need to be able to beat them if they're going to survive in the Premier League. So just get stuck in and go for it.
We started off by considering the joys of the letter C, and obviously we could actually say champions in some way, shape or form from that point of view, but maybe that's fishing too far. Rob, would you like to actually acknowledge some of the champions, such as the Bartleys, such as Sean Rye, and indeed Dana and some of the others, and of course Jimmy Flynn, who've been part and parcel of actually producing the content for Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine, and indirectly the podcast?
Absolutely. Got to thank everybody who's been involved with the fanzine and the podcast this season. Done a fantastic job, as always. And just really thankful that we have so many talented people on linked to the borough that help make the fanzine what it is. So thank you, everybody.
And is the new mayor of Middlesbrough a Borough fan, or does he keep his lines? Because it's obviously Captain Cook with an E as opposed to a kind of as in James Cook, which kind of spoils it somewhat. But, you know, any views from his perspective?
I don't know, actually. I've met him once on my doorstep and one other time. So we'll have to find out whether he's a Borough fan. Hopefully he is.
a politician actually turning up on one's doorstep. Who would have thought it? Talk about retro politics. It's a whole new range of things there. Okay, we may, of course, be back for the free Wembley Fly Me to the Moon package. We decided, I think, we'd hold off on that ahead of the two-leg games that are coming through, depending on results from that point of view. So this may well just be it may well be a partial farewell. If not, we'll be gearing up, obviously, for the next season. But Rob, would you like to take that lead as ever in the final? Oh, in fact, how can people, obviously, get hold of all the season's worth of Fly Me to the Moons if they wish to actually get a historical document of Bury's promotion season?
Yeah, we'll be selling them tomorrow outside the ground at the Riverside, so come and look for one of us. I think there's a couple of us selling. And then the website fmttmborough.com. If you go to the fanzine shop, you can buy this present issue, and there's still a subscription on there. I'll have to make sure that I've still got all the copies. But last match, it absolutely poured down, and loads of my I have to apologise to people that were buying these things off me that were not fit to wear the shirt.
Rob, surely not.
No, they were not fit to wear the shirt. Yeah, they were appalling. Yeah. So hopefully the weather's like this tomorrow, and not the rain that we got this morning. But yeah, I think I've still got enough. So if anybody does want all the back issues, then you can have a look on the subscription and click on that. Yeah,
there we are.
We'll be doing the subscription for next season soon, Alex. And which division will it be in?
Those are the unanswered things. We've even got to say jingles and idents ready to go with either option in mind, as we've just heard. So yeah. There you go. To Jenny Finch. Jenny, final plug for yourself. When's your next novel coming out?
Later on in the year, the fifth and potentially final Alex Hastings is coming out, but I am going to put out two short stories, which will be Kindles before that.
Excellent. There we are, keeping the industrial work going even in Tipperary, which is great stuff. More Tipperary tales will follow too. Chris Bartley, to Thomas Bartley, to Jenny Finch, and of course, Rob Nichols. That's it, Rob. It's over to you. Final line needs to be addressed.
On the count of three, should we all go for a come on, Borough? One, two, three. Come on, Borough.
Come on, Borough.
Up the Borough.
Up the Borough.